Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
It was a dark and stormy night in the city. It always is. The name's Paulinelli. That's my partner, Belle. We have an office on the 34th floor of the Writer's Block. We've seen it all. Then the storm blew her in. Said her name was Rachel, and she had a story to tell. They always do.
That was Freddie. That was Mr. Richard Paulinelli and Bobby Jean Belle. And, of course, the last time our guest, Rachel Tamayo, was on our show, and we'll get to her in a little bit, was August 13th, 2020. I was in the hospital, so I missed your show then, Rachel, but I'm damn sure not going to miss it tonight because I'm looking at you. The loveliness of your vision. Woo-hoo! Welcome to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Mr. Russ Avison. Hello.
Hello, Russ. Jimmy. How are you?
You know, I'm okay today. I finally got things settled today, and I'm just doing a lot better than I was this morning, I will tell you.
You sound a little nasally.
Well, you know, my allergies hit. And I, no matter how many cortisone I take or whatever, it just doesn't clear it up. So
I don't know. You have this problem anytime.
I'm allergic to Russ Avison. Put that down in the record books.
Yeah, there
you go. Long distance. And just so everybody knows, we are recording this. It will be the video will be available probably within about 2 or 3 days. So that being said, of course, the one and the only Mr. Henry Park opens the first show of every month. Today is the first show of the month of March. So, Mr. Henry Park, welcome back to the Writer's Block, my friend.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here, Jim.
And it's always a pleasure to have you, Henry.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, now, maybe the biggest news in the Western world, though contemporary Western, is that Elmore Leonard's Justified is coming back. Timothy Olyphant is returning to star, and Quentin Tarantino is in talks to direct some episodes. Its basis is another Elmore Leonard novel, City Primeval, High Noon and Bright. And they're swapping. The busiest man in the TV business right now has to be Taylor Sheridan.
Oh, yeah.
1880.
Go ahead.
His 1883 recently ended. And if you tell me how it ended, I'll kill you.
No, I won't. I say.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And Paramount Plus has ordered additional episodes. They'd already renewed Yellowstone for a fifth season, renewed Mayor of Kingston for a second, and announced a film on the life of one of the first black lawmen, Bass Reeves, starring David
I can never say his name either.
Oyelowo?
Yeah, whatever.
That guy. Real good actor. the next chapter in the lives of the Dutton family will be 1932, featuring the grown-up 1883 Dutton kids during Prohibition and the Great Depression. And then there's a new series starring Billy Bob Thornton, another starring Sylvester Stallone, and a third, Kidman and Zoe Saldana. Last month, that both of the Westerns that Nicolas Cage made last year have been picked up by Saban Films.
Right.
I think they're trying to become the new Republic Pictures. They've also acquired Hostile Territory from writer-director star Brian Presley. He plays a Union officer thought to have died in the Civil War, whose children have been accidentally put on the orphan train and sent out west. We were sorry to hear, to learn of the passing yesterday of Alan Ladd Jr. at the age of 84.
Yeah.
The son and namesake of movie star Alan Ladd, Laddie, as Jr. was called, was a studio executive and producer, and among the Westerns he was associated with were Take a Hard Ride, The Last Hard Men, Butch and Sundance, the early years, and Quigley Down Under. It had recently been announced that he was developing another Western, North of Cheyenne, with Bad Company writer-director Robert Benton. Coincidentally, earlier this week, I was talking with Bad Company star John Savage about it being that film's 50th anniversary. Can you believe that?
Yeah, no, I can't.
But it's true.
It's
finally
true.
It is. And finally, I've got to say something about Sam Elliott, who has been enduring a poop storm after calling Power of the Dog a piece of fecal matter, I believe it was, and denouncing it for all the gay stuff in it. Now, Sam Elliott is a terrific actor who has done the Westerns proud for years. He has the right to his opinions and the right to speak them. People who think they have the right to shut up on popular opinions are thinking like Putin.
Right.
Now, when I talked about Power of the Dog, I didn't talk about the gay elements because I didn't want to give away too much plot.
Right.
But what I did say is that it's a Western, like a Western talented Mr. Ripley. And I enjoyed it. It's a beautiful shot film. Newton feels excellent. But it feels much longer than its 2 hours and 6 minutes. And Sam's comparison of Jane Campion's cowboys to Chippendale dancers running around in chaps and no shirts is dead on. I almost laughed myself sick at those scenes. They look right out of Andy Warhol's Lonesome Cowboys. And I'm still mad at Jane Campion about the piano. I never want to see that much of Harvey Keitel again.
Oh, me either.
Yeah. And you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
All right. Thank you, Henry. And we'll be talking to you the 1st of April.
I look forward to it.
April
Fool's Day.
Oh, yes, sir. Have yourself a great month, and we'll be talking soon.
Great. Bye-bye, folks. Have a great show.
I just have to kind of throw this in because Henry alluded to it just a minute ago. You know, I was saying, but the actor said, at that point, I had the right to remain silent. I just didn't have the ability. Oh, that was Ron White.
Oh, I like
that. But he got thrown out of a bar in New York. He said, at that point, I had the right to remain silent. I just didn't have the ability.
Yeah. I think I heard him say that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, a lot of actors need to learn that. They have the right to remain silent. They should probably practice. Okay. We have with us tonight a returning guest. Last time she was with us was August 13th of 2020. And I was in the hospital at that point, and I missed her show. I actually listened to it again the other day. And Richard and Bobby Jean did a fantastic job interviewing her. And I don't know if we can do much better, but we're going to give it a shot. Rachel Chabot, winning the award-winning thriller, Crazy Love, amongst other titles. Before she started her writing career, she was a highly awarded 9/11. I didn't even know you could be a highly awarded 9/11 operator, but I guess you can. With 12 years of experience and many commendations under her belt, upon exiting law enforcement, she's focused her writing career on the dark, suspenseful, and psychological after beginning as a romance author. And I'm so glad you left that genre. Oh, you have no clue. Now, Rachel uses her dark thrillers as sort of self-therapy. After all those years answering 911 calls and works all that she knows and was exposed into the frighteningly realistic and layered characters her readers know and love her for. Rachel lives in the Texas Gulf Coast of Houston, Texas, with her husband of 18 years this May, and there are 2 children and 2 step-sister pups they rescued from a dog shelter. Hey. It's right off your website, and if it's a lie, your friends will know. Welcome to Writer's Block, Ms. Rachel Tamayo. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I have to say, I before the show went on, I called you naughty, but you are. I mean, your writing is naughty. Let's just face it. I mean, you really can get into it, but it actually is germane to the story, and it just rolls right along with it. So it's not out of place. No, it's not. And this story started hard, ended hard. And the middle was taken up with so many revelations and backstabbings and, oh, my God, just all kinds of twists and turns. And I have to ask, where did this story come from?
You know, I was afraid somebody would ask. I don't know. It's just the darkness that lives in the back of my mind, I guess. The way I write, it typically starts as one idea and involves into a completely different idea. That's always happens to me. It started where as a seed, and I don't quite know where it's going, you know, so I start writing it, and as the ideas come in, I go back and I make the changes, you know, to make the ideas fit. So it just evolves. And in the end, I usually don't know exactly what happened.
I have found that because I do the same thing. A lot of writers, good writers, do that. They allow their characters to kind of dictate where the story is going to go. And if the character doesn't like where you're going with their character, they'll damn sure tell you in a nanosecond, because they'll push your mind someplace else and say, no, it's not supposed to be.
Right. And I know, even if it's a good idea, it just doesn't feel right. Like my gut tells me, it just won't let me move forward.
Yeah.
I get stuck, you know, in places because that I have to wait for the story to tell me where it's going.
Yeah. Are you an outliner or are you a pantser?
I'm a pantser. I cannot outline. I tried it once and it was an absolute disaster.
Me too.
My hat's off to those writers that can do that. It's got to make things easier, but I just can't.
I don't know. I mean, Richard tried it too, and he couldn't do it. And he can't. Actually, we wrote a book together, and he handed me an outline of the book, of the story. We by the third chapter, we were so totally off the outline that, you know, it just went in the trash. And we pantsed it the rest of the way out through.
Yeah, you know, that's what would happen to me. It's pretty pointless.
Do you think stories? Because you said you have to kind of wait and see where the characters take you. Do you think that the stories are actually all in your mind and that you just it comes out at different times, but it's already there and seated in your brain?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I like the book I'm writing now is taken forever because the ideas are coming slowly. I don't know where the ideas come from. If they're, it's very well could be, because I spent a lot of years, you know, answering 911 and hearing all kinds of things, and it could just be like subconscious, I guess. I don't know.
Your characters are very well developed, and you bring them in. At some points, you bring them in very startlingly. And and all of a sudden you go from one character, is it Brittany?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you go to her dark side, mm-hmm. and then you have Madison. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, well, I'm not going to give anything away, but it turns out that Madison isn't Madison either. So, I'm not sure who she is at this point.
It's people like, who's the main character in your story? The one that just came out this last Saturday. And I have to tell them, I don't know. now that you've read it, you understand why.
Absolutely.
I'm like, I couldn't tell you who the main character is. And honestly, because if I explain why I don't know, then it gives it away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, this book is definitely, it's called Mine. Mm-hmm. It's a reference to a piece of the book. I'm not going to say what. This book has so many things that can give it away so easily. I just don't really want to say anything.
It's difficult to talk about what it's about.
I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, but it's one of those kind of books where you're reading it and you think, well, I got to put it down and go to bed. Nah. Turn the page. So that's what I did. I just kept on going. I told you the other night, I read it one day.
Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot. I hear that. I get that feedback. I see that in reviews and when readers reach out to me and tell me that they read it. Even though it's a 400 and some odd page book, you know, it's not a small book.
No, it's not.
They can't put it down. And I take that as a great compliment. I like myself fast-paced books, and I don't like a lot of fluff in mine. I mean, and you just, when you're reading, you want to see what's going to happen. You know, I don't need the fluff. So that's what I write.
Well, you kind of made Midland and Odessa part of the characters of the book. Mm-hmm. Having been in Midland and Odessa, in the late part of the Bear Parrot of Texas, heading from, you know, Midland, Odessa to Van Horn to El Paso. There's nothing there, virtually.
No.
Mm-mm. It's wide open state plains.
Yeah.
It's right. In fact, it's right at the start of the Llano Estacado, where the stake plants start and run up the Panhandle. And there's virtually nothing there but oil wells now.
Yeah, there's a lot of open space up there.
Oh, there's lots of open spaces. Yeah. But you've made that part of the book, and you've made the the question I'm going to ask is, did you have a person in this little conspiracy when you started out, or was that an afterthought?
No, I didn't know. I debated on it pretty heavily. Actually, I did. I couldn't decide whether I was going to go that way with it or not. And in the end, I decided to go ahead and just jump, you know, because I couldn't think of a better way to end it.
Well, sometimes you just got to go off the bridge and hope it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to end it right there. We're going to be back with you in just a minute. But right now, we'll be back with you. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we will be back with you shortly, right after a brief word from LA Talk Radio. If you have never listened to LA Talk Radio, then you need to treat yourself to one of the best online live radio stations around. You listen to talk radio? Well, then, LA Talk Radio wants you. See, we have 50-minute slots available all day, Saturdays and Sundays included. And we are looking to fill those slots with high-quality broadcasts from talk hosts that are in the know. If you think you have what it takes, go to www.latalkradio.com and click the link that says Become a Host. Then just follow the simple instructions. Before you know it, you'll be joining the legion of radio folks that got their start right here at LA Talk Radio. That's www.latalkradio.com. You have something to say. Now let's hear it. LA Talk Radio. And it is now 6:16. We're back with our guest, Rachel Tamayo. And if you want to call and talk to Rachel tonight, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. Okay. Russ, you get anything for Rachel?
No, actually, I've been thinking here about how these. Okay, first, Rachel, I'm not a writer. In fact, I was happy to hear that you have rescued your dogs, because I'm a dog trainer and I've been for a long time. Really? But the thing that has fascinated me about writers in general, except for Jim, I've been never curious about him, but that these stories that kind of bubble up out of you. I mean, this is a fascinating thing. And you said just before we took the break that you were debating on, bringing in the third character or not. How do you go about making these decisions? Is it a feeling, or is it like, gee, will it sell better if I do this? I mean, how do you come making those?
It touches on a part of an article I wrote recently as far as when you, as a writer, at some point, every writer has to decide, are you writing for yourself? Or are you writing for the public? That's a decision that every writer has to make. Because I think every writer starts out writing what they like, what they want for themselves. And as they grow and as they start getting fans and readers, they have to start making decisions based on what they think their fans, you know? I actually, when I wrote Crazy Love, I had it very seriously considered an alternate ending to that book. And I didn't go with it because of the feedback. When I reached out to readers as far as, hey, what if this happened to a character in a book you read, I got a lot of negative feedback. Hmm. And so I decided not to move forward with it, because even though it would have been a mind to isolate the readers that would have felt betrayed by the such a change in the plot. So... Because I think we've all read books that we got through, and then at the end you're like, what was that at the end, you know? Or a movie even, you know, you're really amped up and you think it's going to have this great ending, and then the ending is just, it just ruins the whole thing.
That's how my life is every week.
Right. All of us lately.
that?
Yeah. But I consider that now. And when I wrote mine, I considered that, because I was thinking, what would happen if I did this with this character, and like I did with Crazy Love, you know, considering what I thought the original people, and I got feedback, and I made the decision based on what I thought the, how the readers would feel.
Interesting.
And also, though, based on how it works in the story. I'm not just going to decide, like, this isn't like a choose-your-own-adventure, you know? It's, I do have to make it work in the story as far as, you know, what works best, but it's kind of a multi-layered decision when it comes to something like that. Because I really like putting twists in my stories, but I have to consider them, you know, when I'm writing them.
Yeah, but you do that well a lot.
Yeah, you do. Do you find yourself writing scenes that you maybe dreamt about or thought about during the day and then set them aside and then insert them where it's appropriate? Or do you just start to finish write?
I write linear. I write start to finish.
Okay.
When I was writing younger, because I've been writing one way or another my whole life, and when I was a teenager, I have still stacks of journals out in the garage from when I was growing up writing, and I would have these scenes in my head from books that I wanted to write or had yet to write or would never write, and so I would just write these scenes in my journal. I did used to do that, and I think a lot of writers have this. Once you get a scene in your head, you can't get it out until you put it on paper. But now that I'm writing and focused on the plot and everything, that's changed a bit for me. So I'm focused on the problem at hand. This is a situation my characters are in, and what am I going to do about it? You know, where's the story going to go from here? I've been able to focus.
That's an honest answer.
Yeah. How much time do you spend every day writing, or do you write every day?
I do not write every day. I'm not the sort of writer that can write if I don't. It doesn't feel right. You know, I've heard that theory that, oh, you should write every day. Not necessarily. You don't have to write every day. It works well for some people. It works great. And if it works well for you, please do. But it's never worked well for me, because if I force myself to write when I'm not feeling it, it won't come out well.
Yeah, that's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that you don't feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It doesn't come out right, and I end up deleting it.
Yeah, we had a guest on, Ken LaSalle, actually. He's been on two or three times now. And Ken used to write. He sat down and words. I thought, six days a week. So that's 30,000 words a week. I mean, that's half a novel.
Yeah.
You know? And the last time he was on, I said, you still writing 5,000 words a week? He goes, hell no.
Yeah. Right. That's a lot of writers are having that problem lately.
Like a lot of good Catholic boys, he gave it up for Lent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I got one last question. I mean, about the process.
Go ahead.
So you're a pantser, but at some point you must have had an idea about this story, just overall, kind of the outline of your story. You didn't write it down, but it was kind of bubbling in your head. And then you decide, okay, I'm ready to start writing in this. Mm-hmm. How did you get to the point where you say, okay, I'm going to write my first page now, and you know where you're going to start? Where did that come from? Or how did you arrive at that point?
It's like a seed, you know, I have the idea and I let it sort of stew and germinate for a bit, think about where I want it to be and what the characters are going to be like. And, it, you know, from one version to the next, the characters may completely change. That happens a lot, you know, but I have to start somewhere. And, so I'll just start basically with, I come up with a scene and I typically like to open with a bang. If you've read the last couple of books, especially open with a very grab you scene. And I'll try to think of something for that and start there. and then we'll just see the story where the story takes me. A lot of the time, I know where it's end, and I know the beginning. It's the middle that, you know, but I think that's the problem I'm having right now. The reason it's coming along so slowly is I don't know the ending. The book I'm writing.
Which is unusual for you, correct? You usually know
it is. It is actually. It's happened to me once or twice, you know, that I had a general idea of where I wanted it to go and how I wanted it to end. And I worked towards that and the end worked itself out. But if I have no clue, like now, what I'm going to do at the end of it, it's a struggle to move forward because I don't know where I'm headed.
Right. Yeah. Well, they have, there's a saying that says, if you don't know where you're going, you'll get there really fast.
That's true.
And actually, you led me to, I'm sorry, to one other question. I keep stepping on Jim here.
No, go ahead.
When you write your first scene, mm-hmm. it's always going in the middle of the book, and then you work toward that.
It could change. Yeah, most definitely. I may start it one way, and then as I change it, you know, write this version and that version, and as the plot changes, I may realize this doesn't work anymore, and I'll stick it somewhere else in the book and maybe change it here and there to where it fits with what I've newly put in. But yeah, it does happen.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm sorry. This may be boring for a lot of people, but I find this really curious. The process. Well,
that's what we're here for, Rush. New writers.
All right.
It's boring.
I found your dialogue snappy, but I also found it realistic. Mm-hmm. I even sat and I started reading your book at like 1:30 Tuesday mm-hmm. morning, or was it Tuesday morning, Monday morning, whatever it was. And I found myself sitting there by myself in the living room saying out loud your dialogue to see if it felt realistic when it was out loud. And it did.
Really? Oh.
Yeah. I do that with my own too.
Yeah.
So you know, I always read my dialogue back out loud to make sure it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but one thing I learned about dialogue is that it has to match your character, and if it doesn't match your character, you can have the best dialogue in the world, but it's bad dialogue if it doesn't match your character.
Right. Exactly.
You know, a good example was some advice that I gave a new writer when we were working on his very first book, and he had an English sheriff, Marshall. Mm-hmm. In Belfouche, North South Dakota, saying he's English, and he's saying, "Now y'all, you know, do this." Say, no, no.
Yeah.
No.
Consistency is key.
Y'all.
Yeah.
So we had to match his doctor to the sheriff to the marshal. But I'm glad we were able to fix that for him. But your dialogue actually works really well, and it works through really well throughout the entire book. And I, how much time do you spend on your dialogue when you're constructing it?
I don't really spend much. It just flows out of me, honestly. Once I know what I want to happen, it just comes out.
Okay.
It's pretty natural for me. Dialogue. I've never really struggled with it.
You know, because when I write dialogue, I don't struggle with it, but I always make sure that it's my character's talking. Mm-hmm. And I've written a series of books now that has like 13 in a series that has the same characters. So you pretty much know what they're going to sound say and what they're going to sound like when they say it. So we were writing maybe in three. Mm-hmm. You're not always real sure how the character is going to react or what he's going to say. And I just, I mean, you manage really, really, really well. And I have to commend you and applaud you on that. In fact, I have to applaud you the entire book of mine. It was a great read, and we're going to get into some other stuff here. But I'm going to go to our middle break, and we'll be right back. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block, and we'll be right back after this brief word from Tuscany Bay Books. I was sitting in my private office looking at my private window, dropping private eye drops in my private eye, when a tall blonde walked by, and now you ask me how I know she was tall? My office is on the second floor. And then there was a knock on the door, so I jumped out of my chair, I tripped over the couch, I unlatched the latch, and there stand a beautiful blonde holding a manuscript. And I said, "Hi, girl, I want my book published." And I said, "Well, you've come to the right place. This is Tuscany Bay Books, and that's exactly what we do. why don't you come in and we'll have a drink on it? But all I have is a bottle of ink. So we drank that and stood around feeling mighty blue. But you don't have to feel mighty blue, because at Tuscany Bay, we'll not only format your book, we'll proofread it, we'll edit it, we'll get it printed, and we'll bitch you a cover that will make your head spin and make you so proud of the work that you've done. Tuscany Bay Books, you can't go wrong, and you can find us on the web at www.tuscanybaybooks.com. And if you see a blonde walk by holding a manuscript and a bottle of blue ink, just say hi. And we are back. It is now 6:30, and we're with our guest tonight, Rachel Tamayo, and of course, Russ Avison, out there in Fillmore, California. How's the weather out there, Russ?
It's actually nice today. It's about 72 degrees. We've had really hot weather the last few days, and now the next 3 days are going to be in the 50s and rain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it changes. You know, this is becoming one of those places where you say, you don't like the weather? Wait a minute.
Well, that's Houston.
Like Texas.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's Houston. Mm-hmm. Blink and the weather changes.
Exactly.
In fact, I was in Houston once and it rained so hard, I had to pull off the road because I could not see the road.
And yeah, that happens too.
And then it started hailing. So it's Texas has got strange weather.
We have all the weather, all of it. In the same
right,
day.
That's true.
You don't have snow, though.
Not usually.
Yeah, we got snow here this year. A lot of it, actually. Okay. Do you have a special place, or do you just grab your laptop, go sit and watch TV, and hammer away?
Yeah, I can pretty much write anywhere. I don't have any kind of special place or music or mood or anything like that. If I know what I want, I'm going to put down, if I can pretty much do it anywhere. Because okay. I was a 911 dispatcher for 12 years.
And right.
Dispatchers have a ability to tune out anything. And I've not lost that. The reason is because in the dispatch center, unless you're in a huge city like Houston or New York or San Francisco or somewhere where it's a different, in regular sized cities, the dispatch center has their ups and downs. There's TVs, there's radios sitting there, whatever. You know, the TV's still on, the radio might be on in the background. You can zero focus right in on that call and tune everything else out. All your partners, you have four or five people in there with you, all working at the same time, talking to different people. And I haven't lost that. I mean, my kids are doing this, the dogs are barking, my husband's doing whatever, the TV's on, and I can focus so completely on what I'm writing that I can't, I'm like, what, were you talking to me?
That's my wife all the time.
Yeah.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. Well, I say that all the time, mostly because I can't hear, and mostly because my wife, and then my wife talks to me when the TV's on.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's a very quiet speaker. So I'm going, what? And then I have to get mad. I turn down the TV or stop what I'm doing and say, what? What is a big part of my vocabulary. So I had a specific question I was going to ask you. And I know what it was. You signed up with a publicist, Mickey Mickelson, and Creative Edge. How long have you been with Mickey?
I'm not sure. Maybe probably a year now.
Year?
I'd say, yeah. This is the first book release that I've done with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would have signed up with him probably because Carnal Knowledge came out last June or July. And I signed up with him right after that.
Okay.
So, I've been with him since right after Carnal Knowledge came out. I mean,
okay.
This is the first book launch that I've done with them. I was honestly really excited to have them help with this.
Mm-hmm. And here's the question. Traditional publishing, indie publishing, or self-publishing?
For me?
Yes.
Traditional.
Your recommendations.
I wanted to be a writer since I can remember, and I of course, they didn't have self-publishing when I started. It was, what do they call it? Vanity publishing.
Yeah, vanity press.
It was extremely expensive back then. It was before, you know, internet was a thing. And, you know, then internet, and it's only in the last, what, like 10 years maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
That self-publishing has become super easy and super common. So it was never an option, I guess, whenever I started wanting to write. And just always, it's like a recognition. It was like a goal, I guess,
sure,
to be good enough that a publisher liked it enough to want to sign it.
Okay. What about, have you, because we, Richard and I have a little vanity, not a vanity press, it's a little boutique publishing company. Mm-hmm. And we have, we're picking up more and more artists all the time, mostly because they don't want to self-publish. Right. But they want things done right. They want their copyrights. They want their ISBN numbers assigned. They want all this stuff, mm-hmm, and a lot of stuff that self-publishing writers don't know about or don't do.
Right.
And so we've created quite a business for ourselves. And I was just kind of curious, is because we have a lot of writers that go to Vanity, or not Vanity, why do I keep saying Vanity?
Because I said Vanity, yeah.
You know, there's still Vanity Presses out there, and yeah, they are, you're right. I mean, it's like $1,500 just to get in the door, mm-hmm, just to send them a manuscript.
It's insane.
Boutiques are a little bit different. They usually, mm-hmm, have a little bit of an upfront cost, but that's because, you know, we do the editing and the proofreading, and that's all inclusive. You know, and we don't charge a lot. We don't charge you your firstborn. But did you find that when I didn't look at it, who published this last book of yours, but did you find that when Penguin was bought out, or was it Simon Schuster was bought out by Penguin, which reduced by publishers Big Five by one. And I think it threw a lot of business over to the boutique publishers, little indie publishers, because there's a lot of publishing now that couldn't be done. And mm-hmm, and the big publishers oftentimes don't even want to look at your stuff.
Right.
You could have a War and Peace, and they don't want to see it.
Exactly. I love the indie publishing houses. They're great because they make it possible for the rest of us that can't get in, no matter how good you are. You just, because you don't know somebody, basically,
right,
to get into the big four or five. You don't know somebody, because most of us don't. So when I say traditional publishing, I honestly include all of that because I feel like they're great. I mean, I my publisher right now is Tangled Tree Publishing. They're an offshoot of Hot Tree Publishing, which does romance. Tangled does suspense and thrillers. But yeah, I think indie publishing houses and self-publishing is good too, because there's a lot of excellent self-published work out there. You know, there's some not great, but also not great published.
Right.
I mean,
well, we found that, in fact, Richard and I talk about this a lot. We find that a lot of the self-publishing, some of the books are really, really, really good. They just didn't take the time to really go through and edit.
Right, because it's expensive.
That's a big deal with self-published books.
It is.
And they don't often edit very well or proofread very well, mm-hmm, or format their book very well, because they don't really know how.
Right, and good editing is not cheap.
No, it's not. No. We offer editing. With our upfront fee, we offer 2 hours of editing, mm-hmm, comes with it. Now, that's not going to get your book edited.
No.
But, you know, but any additional editing, we only charge $20 an hour. Mm-hmm. But good editors will charge $75 to $100 an hour, or by the word, or by the word.
A lot of them charge by the word, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, editing is not cheap. Proofreading is not cheap. You know, and so I think a lot of authors are choosing to go to boutiques because everything is inclusive.
Right.
And we also do, you know, cover design and everything else. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that you say that you like the boutique publishing industry, and it's getting larger.
I think it's, I mean, if you want to be a writer, you should be able to be a writer.
Right.
If you shouldn't be held back because you're not, right, you know, friends with an agent or something, you know?
Right. 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 Well, also on the big publishing houses, they don't push you anymore. They, you know, they don't go out there and, you know, publicize you. And, you know, it's, if you want publicity, you have to do it yourself.
I've heard that. My publicist, actually, we were talking about recently, he was meeting houses, but he says it's not really all it's cracked up to be.
No.
Because they don't market, unless you're, you know, Stephen King or James Patterson or somebody with a name that somebody can grab onto. They're not going to market you. He said the smaller publishers tend to do more marketing than the others, the big ones.
Yeah, and we are actually to be breaking news. Black Dog Publishing / Tuscany Bay Books. We're going to be starting our own marketing arm as well. We have a form on our website that says shameless self marketing, and it's about 4 pages, and it kind of gives you all kinds of ideas on how to market yourself and your book. And a lot of writers are afraid to do that. A lot of writers are afraid to go out there and push their book.
Right.
You want to read it, but afraid to... I don't get that with you, but I get it with a lot of different writers.
It's difficult.
It is
so difficult to find the right way, because you have to find the readers, you know?
Right. Right. And if you're afraid...
It's not an easy thing to do.
And if you're afraid to promote yourself, then why write the book? You know...
Let me ask you, how big of a part does the audiobooks play in getting a writer known?
I don't think very much at all, to be honest.
Either. Half of mine aren't audio. My publisher now doesn't do audiobooks. I personally love audiobooks. I read them all the time just because I don't have time to sit with a book. You know, I listen to them while I'm driving or, you know, doing laundry or sitting at the computer, whatever.
Right.
I love audiobooks. Not it does.
Yeah. I mean, some writers we deal with want them. Mm-hmm. We have a way to get them done if they want them. Most writers don't.
Really?
It's the same thing with hardbacks. We can do hardbound books. A lot of writers don't want them.
Really?
Number one, they're expensive and they're hard to sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody wants to pay, you know, $29 for a book.
Right.
Yeah.
Now we're doing a compendium for Mary Elizabeth Jackson of her Pulitzer series, which is 3 books, children's books. Mm-hmm. We're putting all 3 together, and it's going to be simply marvelous, Pulitzer or whatever. But it's going to be hardbound only, and it's going to be it's about 78 pages. Plus, it's going to include audio disc. Plus, it's numbered. With only 100 copies going out. They're numbered copies and signed by the authors.
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah. And so only, I think that is going to make those books really move for her.
Yeah.
But, you know, let me take another real quick break. In fact, we're going to do your publicist right now. And this is LA Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity. Okay. You've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity. And that's Mickey Mickelson, of course, and he is also the publicist for Tuscany Bay Books. And personally for myself and for Richard Polinelli, and of course for Rachel Tamayo and a number of other people.
Yes.
Okay, the big question comes to you now, Rachel, and it's going to be all wrapped in purple ribbon. You already answered it, kinda. Have you ever gotten writer's block? And if you did, how did you get out of it? Explain, please.
Yes. Actually, recently. I finished writing mine, and I often struggle just a little to move out of one book and into another because I write in a deep point of view, and my mind is so full of the world and characters in the other book that I have to like wipe the slate clean and start over. That's always a bit of a struggle, but that's not writer's block. That's just a transition. Right. But actually this last year, I had writer's block, like actual writer's block for like the first time. I just got so absolutely stuck. And I'm okay with waiting, you know, for a bit. Cause as I said, I don't write every day and I'll go days or weeks, even sometimes before I write. But once I get in the groove, it doesn't take me that long. So I don't mind waiting, but I waited and nothing came, like nothing. And I knew I had an idea and I liked the idea, but I couldn't figure it out. I was just so absolutely stuck. And I actually ran into a lot of authors that had that problem last year. We were in a pandemic and so many things were happening. It sucked a lot of creative juices out of a lot of people. but honestly, what got me out of it, I finally was reading. And I cannot stress enough, if you're a writer, you can only improve by reading, especially in the genre that you write in. Just it's like studying, you know, what are they doing that you're not doing? What do you hate? What do you like? You have to. But anyway, what got me out of it, I was Googling ideas for how to break my writer's block because I was getting very frustrated. It'd been some months. And I ran across an article about Stephen King and how he got writer's block when he was writing The Stand. It was the only time he ever got writer's block. He got stuck. He got so stuck that he almost threw the book away. but he decided to he talks about what got him stuck was he says most of the time when you get writer's block is because you're in some kind of a rut. You're writing the same character. You're writing the same plot, just with a twist. You're writing the same scene, something in it is bothering you. You're in a rut. Mm-hmm. He said that's what he was facing. He was in some kind of rut. He says you're afraid to step outside of your comfort zone, and it causes you writer's block. So that's what he did. And the stand, he finally decided to do something that he was afraid to do, and he wrote it, and it blew his mind open. So I realize that because I always have this fear that I'm writing the same character over and over and over again with a new name and how you make these people, you know, from the ground up. And that's a fear that I always have in the back of my head. but I decided I needed inspiration. So I decided to read outside of my comfort zone. And I started reading Stephen King. And I'm not a horror person, but I decided maybe if I stepped outside of my comfort zone, it would help me. And I read Gerald's Game. That was the one I grabbed, and I read that. And then I read The Shining, and then I read Dolores Claiborne. And I started reading through his books and seeing how he created his people and his characters and who's not afraid to do anything. And it unblocked me. Mm-hmm. I finally realized what I was holding back and was able to write again.
Excellent. Excellent answer. Thank you so much. Well, you know, we're out of time. Wow. Oh. So I know when you're having fun, it goes really fast. I know. I want to thank you. Rachel's book is mine. It's available on Amazon and all the online booksellers. And I'm through her website, which is a Rachel Tomeo writer or author.
RachelTamayoWrites.com.
Okay, .com. Mm-hmm. And your Facebook page is?
Rachel Tamayo, author Rachel Tamayo. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Twitter also. Author Rachel Tamayo, Rachel Tamayo Writes.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Rachel. I know it's what, 9 o'clock there almost.
Yeah.
So have yourself a fun time. I'm sure we'll be talking again. And get a hold of the bookie when the next book comes out, and we'll see if we can't get you rebooked. Right. It's going to be 2023, however, I will tell you.
Yeah, I probably do that long before I finish it. So.
Well, we're that booked up through December. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Next week we have our writer Jennifer Irwin, and I believe her name of her book is A Dress Colored Color of the Moon, A Dress the Color of the Moon, or something similar. And she will be joining us at the Writer's Block here, and Bobby Jean Bell will be back with us as well, Richard Polinelli. So with that being said, I want to thank Sam Hassan for getting everything together tonight. And, of course, Russ Avison for joining us.
Of course.
Richard Polinelli, Bobby Jean Bell, myself, and, of course, the bookie, without whom none of this would be possible. Thank you so much for joining us, and we are out of here.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.